This podcast is part of the Red 5 Network. For more Red 5 Network podcasts, visit red5network.com.
K2SO, not an Andor season one, question mark. We got some new merchandise, and we are talking with Darksaber Light about Mando season two and looking ahead. Hello there, Adam.
Hi, Josh.
How's it going?
It's going okay. How about you?
I'm doing pretty well. So, do you want to talk some Star Wars today?
Yeah, that's why I'm here.
Ah, I see what you did there. Nice Obi-Wan reference. So what have you been watching, playing, and reading this week?
Been reading more of Light of the Jedi. I am almost done with Light of the Jedi. I have been watching a lot of History Channel documentaries. That's a little bit out of left field, but that's what I've been watching. I signed up for a trial of History Vault, which is their streaming service of only their documentaries, not any of their current run of reality TV stuff, to put it mildly. So I don't know. I've been watching a lot of that. Some interesting stuff on that streaming service. I've actually been enjoying it a lot. So
nice.
Yeah. How about you?
You know, Brittany and I have been watching The Hobbit. Because I'd been listening to. Well, she's been reading The Hobbit.
Okay.
And so she wanted to watch that. So we got the 4K Hobbit trilogy on digital or whatever.
Fancy.
Yeah, and started watching that, which has been pretty cool. And you know, I've been listening to Force of Light, their kind of reaction to their first watch of Lord of the Rings, Fellowship and Two Towers so far. And I've just been in a Lord of the Rings Middle Earth mood.
I'm feeling you there actually. Yeah. I got Baron and Luthien the book for Christmas. So I'm actually very much itching to get into some Lord of the Rings stuff very soon.
Yeah. I've been enjoying diving back into that. And, you know, it's kind of interesting too, hearing kind of people talk about Lord of the Rings, you know, seeing it for the first time has been interesting, you know?
Yeah. Force of Light's series on that. And they're doing Return of the King this week. But it's been a lot of fun to watch along and listen along. And I was chatting with Michelle a little bit too. And, yeah, that's been a lot of fun watching them on their first watch through.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, that's pretty much what I've been up to. I did watch the first four episodes of The Mandalorian season two again to prepare for our discussion later today. I didn't make it, you know, quite through the whole season, but I'm enjoying that.
Luke
as well.
Appears at the end.
Spoiler warning.
Sorry.
Good thing I already watched that episode three times.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So we actually have a lot of news this week, so let's jump right into our news segment.
Well, you want the bad news or the really bad news?
So when it comes to the High Republic and the Star Wars YouTube channel, as well as StarWars.com, we're getting a new series of digital shorts about the High Republic and characters in the High Republic. And the first one they released was about Jedi Vernestra Roe. Is that how you say it?
I believe so.
Right. Okay. So is this character in Light of the Jedi, Adam, or...
She makes her main debut in A Test of Courage.
The
Justina Ireland. Okay. So far, I have not seen her in Light of the Jedi, but her main story is in A Test of Courage.
That's cool. And, you know, I think this is pretty neat that we're going to get this. And Matt Martin of the Lucasfilm Story Group told StarWars.com that The High Republic is a unique and fresh era of Star Wars storytelling with new characters, unique visual aesthetic. So we couldn't help but to want to see our new heroes and villains jump out of the page and into animation. So these are animated shorts, and you know, I'm looking forward to all these that are going to be coming out for sure.
Yeah, very glad they're doing some type of you know, visualizations with these characters, you know, so you can see them, so it's not all you know, in the novels, and you know, it brings them to life a little bit more. So I know we're getting comics and all that other good stuff. I actually loved, I don't know if I mentioned this on the show, but I picked up the print version of A Test of Courage, and I think you have that now.
I do. I have it in my possession.
Yeah, but I was really, really pleasantly surprised with the production quality on that book itself. You know, I read the pre-release copy, which was just, you know, a PDF on my tablet. But the actual print production value of this thing, I think, is really great. It's a nice hardcover book. Mm-hmm. There's some nice art in it, so you can get, and not just like you know, like Harry Potter style at the beginning of the chapter. There's a little drawing at the beginning of the chapter, not that type of thing. There's like full color art, almost comic style art in that book throughout. You know, I think there's like three or maybe three ish art inserts in there, and they're just really fun, really good, and I like seeing these characters visualized and brought to life. So this whole you know, animation style short on StarWars.com, I think, is great.
Yeah, I'm definitely, it's nice to be able to have a visual for me, especially because, yeah, you know, my imagination stinks. So being able to see like what these characters look like is easier for me to picture them when I'm reading.
It also helps because, you know, there's so many different species to remember in Star Wars, and you know, to visualize, yeah, that as you're going through without having to go to, you know, Wikipedia or that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. It helps a lot.
Yeah, for sure. In keeping with the High Republic, we're actually going to jump over to another news article. We, Into the Dark, they released kind of a new, what do you want to call it?
Excerpt.
That's the word. Thank you, sir.
That's the one.
An excerpt of Into the Dark. And I've actually, you know, had the good fortune of being able to read this book, and you know, had already read this part, but it was just cool getting to get a little bit more from Into the Dark. I've really been enjoying it. I need to finish it so that I can jump into Light of the Jedi, because I received the hard copy version of that, the hardcover this week. So yeah, I've really been enjoying Into the Dark. Did you read this excerpt, or are you still staying away?
No, I'm actually going to be picking up the book. I'm going to be reading the review copy that we got this mm-hmm. coming mm-hmm. week. So that'll be, I've stayed away from excerpts so far. So yeah. I'll be just reading through the whole book itself this week.
Yeah, and if you want to check out that excerpt, it is on StarWars.com. And now with the introduction of the Leox character here, I can't help but think of why is his name not coming to mind for me right now? Matthew McConaughey,
right? Yeah.
Yeah, I keep thinking about him being this.
Have you seen the concept art? Because it looks like Matthew McConaughey.
yeah, for sure. So that's been fun.
Yeah.
We also have some TV news about Andor, and I actually didn't see this until today, but Alan Tudyk was being interviewed by Collider, and he said he wouldn't be in Andor's first season. However, he does know that he's got a future with the character in other seasons possibly, which brings up an interesting point. But what he had to say was, they're shooting it right now. I'm not in it, but if it stays on the air, stories keep getting told, I'll end up in there. I'm going to be in the show. It's just that the story that Tony Gilroy is telling doesn't involve K2SO until later on. I can't be too specific, but I can definitely say that I'm not going to be in the first season. So, you know, I think when we had the, was it D23 or something where Alan Tudyk was brought on stage with Cassian, the actor that plays Cassian. I believe they were on stage together for the announcement of that show. I forget when it happened. But yeah, so I'm kind of surprised by this. What are your thoughts?
I'm a little surprised by this. I think that No, I mean, Alan Tudyk's definitely said that, you know, they're working up to that. So I think that makes sense to kind of have a little bit of suspense there and, you know, keep you coming back to see K2 eventually and, you know, kind of, you know, kind of see where Cassian is before he meets K2. And, you know, I think it makes sense.
Yeah. And I mean, I know they brought Tony Gilroy in to really just kind of helm this thing. I don't think maybe the story needed tweaking and everything. And that's probably why this happened. You know, maybe Tony Gilroy felt that they needed to start the story somewhere else. And then, you know, eventually get to where they were going with, you know, K2SO showing up and everything. So, but I think what is the most exciting thing about this for me is that it looks like we could get multiple seasons of this show. And I didn't know if I really expected that, you know, to get multiple seasons possibly. So that could be happening.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I expected multiple seasons either, actually. So I'm a little surprised by that too.
Yeah, for sure. So that is exciting, and it'll be exciting to see Andor when it debuts in 2022. I believe it's supposed to be released in the summer of 2022 as of right now.
Yeah.
Jumping down to some comic news, actually, we have some Marvel kind of released their plans for April. So we have April 2021 Star Wars releases, including The High Republic number 4, Bounty Hunters number 11, Darth Vader number 11, Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back 40th anniversary covers, and Dr. Aphra number 9. I think it's interesting here that Darth Vader is heading to Exegol.
That sounds really good.
For sure, yeah.
Because I don't know if you've read the kind of like little breakdown there, because it talks about, you know, Darth Vader is broken by the Emperor. His limbs are shattered. He's forbidden to use the Force. But after surviving Ochi of Bastoon, the eye of Webbish Bog is back, and the horrors of the Red Nebula, Vader stands on the verge of uncovering the Emperor's greatest secrets. But will the revelations on Exegol empower Vader or his master?
I haven't read I'm in at that point. I want to read this one.
I'm in. But, you know, yeah,
I've always wanted to know a little bit more about Exegol and stuff like
that.
Yeah,
really, so. All they had to say there was Exegol, but then you throw stuff in. So that 40th anniversary cover of the ESB, The Empire Strikes Back, looks gorgeous.
I wanted to talk about that because that looks amazing.
Yeah, I have to maybe pick that up in print, I think, because that looks beautiful.
Yeah, it is beautiful. So,
and then Dr. Aphra sounds interesting also, because they're going actually High Republic on that story, almost, you know, because Dr. Aphra is a couple hundred years later, but they're going, you know, kind of like a treasure hunting vibe with that, looking for a Nile hyperdrive and uncovering High Republic secrets, lost technology, things like that. So pretty cool.
So is Dr. Aphra like immortal or something? What's going on here? How does
Dr. Aphra would be more like she's more like an Indiana Jones type character. She's, you know, kind of the treasure hunter of Star Wars. But she's more, so she's looking for relics at this point, you know?
Oh, okay. Okay. So yeah, gotcha.
Yeah. So as far as that goes, that's how that works. But she's more in the time of the Empire. So she's going and looking for, you know, like I said, relics. Then says that she's looking for a Nile hyperdrive here and trying to find out secrets about High Republic technology, which sounds very interesting. So,
yeah, cool stuff. So Marvel's April 2021 slate looks pretty interesting and intriguing here. I might have to jump into the world of comics.
Yeah.
And then we're going to move on to some new merchandise we're getting. So we have some new Star Wars Funko reveals. Funko Fair kicked off its first ever 2-week virtual event this week. And we're looking at a Funko of Ben Solo, and he has the blue lightsaber. He has the Skywalker lightsaber, and he's doing the whole, like, come at me moment with the Knights of Ren in this Funko. So that looks really cool. And we also have Rey with her yellow lightsaber in this Funko. And we also get, of course, Babu Frick. Yep. hey. and we get some Valentine's themed Funko Pops as well. So
yeah.
And I'm loving these keychains, Adam, too. I kind of want one of these keychains that they have here.
Oh, Mando keychains are pretty cool.
Yeah. Anything jumping out at you as far as these Funko releases go?
You know, Funko Pops are things that I like, but I don't really get crazy over them. Mm-hmm. Babu Frick, though, would be the one I think there that I would jump on.
Yeah.
Just love that character. I'm not really a fan of the pink and red Valentine's ones. I don't know, pink,
no, not so much. Not so much.
Yeah, pink Vader and pink Chewie just doesn't really do it for me. But yeah, Babu Frick, I'd jump on for sure.
Yeah. Cool stuff. And we have a little more merch news as well. With an adventure across the galaxy, Star Wars is teaming up with Amazon.com. So if you go to Amazon.com/Star Wars, you can find some of this merchandise, and it starts with celebrating Hoth. So, you know, we're celebrating a specific location here with this merchandise. So, you know, there's like some Hoth shirts and pants. The one shirt features things you'll find on Hoth, and, you know, like there's a Tauntaun on there. There's that a Wampa
sleepwear looks very comfortable. I might have to,
it does look comfortable.
That Black Series Han Solo looks very, yes, very good too in the Hoth outfit.
For sure. Yeah, so got some good stuff. I actually ventured over to Amazon.com/Star Wars, and I found some things that I think I'm going to have to add to the wish list.
Nice.
So, yeah. But, yeah, I think that pretty much rounds out our news segment. And, Adam, do you want to lead us into our next segment?
Yeah, we're getting ready to talk to Jess and Arca Jade from Darksaber Light about Mando.
Mando!
About halfway through the second season of The Mandalorian, we welcomed Jess from Darksaber Light on the show for the very first time. And, you know, now that the season's wrapped up, we actually talked about this a little bit on that last show. But we are inviting Jess back, and we actually have the full Darksaber Light this time, because not only do we have Jess, but we have her co-host, Arica Jade, which is a lot of fun. So we're happy to have you both on the show. Welcome for the first time to Arica, and welcome back to Jess.
Thank you so much. It's so exciting to be back.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Yeah, no problem. We're very excited about this. A lot happened on Mandalorian season 2, so we've got a good bit to talk about here. And I know just from listening to Darksaber Light that you both thought of the last 4 episodes. But how about you both just kind of recap how you felt about, you know, where season 2 went and all the revelations that we got in the last half of that season?
Yeah, you're definitely right that it definitely covered an awful lot those last couple of episodes. But I think that it was also a second half where we got some questions answered and a whole lot more were raised. And I don't know, I think that, it was definitely a second half that, people just went nuts. I thought that it was just... Yeah. It was so fun to see storytelling that was really getting the entire fan base just really psyched up. And I'm incredibly excited to see where they're planning on going.
I was incredibly impressed with the second half of the season. I mean, I thought the whole season was great, but just they really ramped it up in the second half and just had so many different surprises up their sleeve. It was so much fun to watch, and it's so much fun to see everybody reacting to what they gave us.
Yeah, for sure. Mandalorian seems to be one of those shows that has had the rare ability to just get everyone excited, you know. And I know there's been a few like controversies here and there, but for the most part, people just love watching The Mandalorian and are just excited every week to see that new story, see where we're gonna go. And that's, that doesn't happen a lot in media in general, not just Star Wars. So it's exciting to see that type of excitement around a show.
I think that it's absolutely a testament to the show creators and the people who are helming this show, the fact that, you know, they've always gone out of their way to connect original trilogy, prequel trilogy, sequel trilogy, comic books, EU stuff, video games. There's something for everyone that is showing up in The Mandalorian. And I think that it's just showing people that there really is a lot more that connects us, and that this story is all one story, and they're trying to make it as cohesive as possible. And I think that people are recognizing that and really appreciating that aspect.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, I just kind of experienced the excitement. I was getting an MRI yesterday, actually, and one of the you know, the people that work there, he saw my Star Wars mask that I had on. He's like, "Do you watch Mando?" I'm like, "Yeah, of course I watch Mando." He's like, "Dude," he was like, "it's so good, isn't it?" He was like, I was drawn in that very first scene in season one, you know, when he was in that bar and everything, or he was in that cantina. I was like, "Yeah." And he's like, and I introduced my dad to it, and he was always like a Star Trek fan, this guy was saying, but now he loves it and everything. And, you know, you can just kind of feel that excitement, and a lot of people getting behind it. And my words to him were, yeah, I mean, it's something that everybody can get something out of, I think. And, you know, it's definitely united the fan base. And I just finished rewatching the first half of season two, and I'm going to, you know, get into that latter half here again, even though I've watched all the episodes like at least three times, I absolutely love it. So, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's jump into something we actually talked about on the last show, the Darksaber, because the Darksaber was, of course, you know, an important aspect of the last part of the season. And, you know, we talked about, you know, whether or not the Darksaber was really needed to become a ruler of Mandalore, or if it was, you know, kind of that more symbolic thing. And we kind of got an answer to that question, I think. So let's talk a little bit about Gideon's, you know, monologue during the last part of that season. And just for our listeners, we're not really going to go in order, like recapping the last four episodes. We've all already done that, but we're going to touch on some of the high points here. So let's talk about Gideon's message there, because that kind of seemed to confirm what we talked about last time, that it's really more of a symbolic thing, right?
It was really interesting to see what was going on there. It's, you know, I remember when that segment started happening and Gideon sitting there going, you know, the Darksaber doesn't have power. The story has power. And it was like, I could feel this collective gasp of, but that's not what happened in Rebels.
Right.
And so it's one of those things that's, it's really frustrating to not have the answer to that question yet. Even Katie Sackhoff just released an interview saying she doesn't know why the change. It's not for her to know yet, but she's absolutely confident that Dave and John have a plan. It's just not for us to know yet, but it has been both fun and frustrating to see people reacting to, well, why is this different? Why was she able to take it from Sabine, but she's not willing to take it from Din? And I do think that you're right, though. It gets back to this idea of this has become more of a symbol of leadership, and it does have an importance. But I'm hoping that comes back to, I'm hoping that plays an important part in season three, this idea of what exactly this saber means, and is it necessary to rule? You know, now we've set up this dichotomy of who's going to rule. Is it going to be Din, or is it going to be Bo-Katan? Is it going to be somebody else? And they're at an impasse that has to be rectified. We're not really sure how that's going to happen, but part of me thinks that it could come about from, for example, Bo realizing she doesn't need it, or some other option.
Yeah, that's a great point. Arca, do you have anything to add there?
I think that I guess my frustration with some people reacting to it is that everybody sort of expected an answer right away, and I was kind of like, well, you know, they're not going to give us everything immediately, because that would defeat the point of waiting. But I do think it is setting up for something potentially interesting that Jess touched on about, you know, is Bo going to realize that she doesn't actually need it to rule? Is there, are they kind of clinging to this symbol of leadership of Mandalore like too much, and right. is that something that they need to kind of loosen their grip on in order to move forward?
Yeah, that's a very interesting idea. We should probably touch on that a little bit more, because that kind of almost mirrors Din's journey so far, you know, realizing that there's more than one way, literally more than one way. And so maybe this is kind of Bo-Katan's journey on her own, is to realize that this Darksaber legend or story, as Gideon put it, you know, maybe she doesn't need it to be what she wants to be, you know?
Her sister didn't need it.
Right. Mm. Exactly. Yeah. Good point.
Yeah, those are good points that I hadn't really thought about. So it's always good to get those different perspectives. And, you know, as far as fan reactions, I think it's the same thing as how fans reacted in season one when Din kind of refused to take his helmet off. Mm-hmm. And people were like, oh, but in Rebels and in Clone Wars, they took their helmet. Right. There's a reason. We're going to find out. And, you know, we trust in John and Dave. I absolutely agree with that point. So.
Yeah, and I don't know why, but that's a great point about Satine. I don't know why I haven't thought about that. She never needed a Darksaber, you know. And you know, she led during a very peaceful time of Mandalore, so it's not like, you know, not having that caused any rife or, you know, problems within her rule. You know, or I mean, I'm sure that there were issues, but it's like it never caused an uprising to not have a Darksaber, right?
Well, and it also seems like at that time, it probably was with Pre Vizsla, and it was probably kind of hidden. We're not really sure of the story there, but
yeah.
But so I can understand why she would think she might need it. But I hope that is touched on, this idea that yes, it is a symbolic and important, you know, piece of their history and piece of leadership, but it's not everything. And I think that what we haven't gotten a lot of Bo's reflections on her sister, but what we have gotten is that, even in spite of their vast ideological differences, her appearances in Rebels and everything really shows that she recognized that Satine was a good leader. And I hope that she's able to recognize that it's not all about having this sword that she thinks that she needs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. I think that would be great. Character.
I do think that it's really interesting, though. I know that Arika brought up a really interesting question about, well, I mean, you know, personally, I'm Team Bo. I really want to see her on the throne. But that, you know, we've got our main character who has now found himself with this sword that he never expected. You know, I think that the joke has been that Din is kind of the, you know, he doesn't even want to be the protagonist in his own story, and people are forcing himself to be.
Yeah.
But Arika, you remember what you said about that idea of, you know, the potential of Din and his own opportunity for leadership?
Yeah, I think, well, I had this theory that maybe, like, he is going to end up being the legitimate leader, and he just doesn't realize that he has the potential there yet, because it does seem to be following very much like a King Arthur type story. And it kind of struck me as very similar to the Disney version of Sword in the Stone, that version of King Arthur didn't even know what the sword was. He was just like, I've got to go get a sword because my brother needs a sword. And he pulls the sword out, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, congrats, you're King of England. So I feel like there's a possibility that he might actually possess the qualities to be a good leader of the Mandalorians. He just doesn't know it yet, and that we might see that as being his character journey, and maybe seeing Bo kind of coming to accept that and realizing that that might be the best thing for her people, for her to not actually be on the throne. So I suppose we'll see, but...
Yeah. It's a great point, because like you said, Din has been very, you know, very quick to hand off his his hero role, you know, even trying just everything he can to push that Darksaber back onto Bo at the end. But yeah, it's a great point.
Yeah, Arika, I got goosebumps just hearing you talk about that, because I love this idea of this leaders, the best leaders being leaders that don't necessarily want to be the leader, you know what I mean? And it just happens and it unravels, and they become a better leader, you know, maybe for the reason that they don't want to be. So yeah, I love that idea. I had that thought, but you put it a lot more eloquently than I would have. So
yeah, definitely. So, you know, kind of moving on from Din and Darksaber a little bit, but still staying within Mandalore lore. We got some interesting stuff here with Boba Fett, because we got an initial answer, maybe, to that age-old question about his lineage, you know. He talked about his father, Jango, being a foundling, and this was in the tragedy, the episode The Tragedy. You know, so you know, kind of after that episode, we're like, okay, we kind of know, you know, now Jango's legitimate Mandalorian. There's maybe some bad blood there in Clone Wars or whatever, but you know, Jango's a Mandalorian. But then Bo-Katan was kind of a little bit more combative about that. So let's jump into that. Well, what did you guys take away from those two differing points of view?
Yeah, this is definitely something where as soon as Bo started pushing back against Boba, I was like, oh no, we're going to have back. This controversy to deal with. And the thing that I came away with, you know, really trying to dissect this as you know, I've really tried to figure out, you know, what are the rules behind these scenes? And I always, and like I said before, like I knew that Dave Filoni was going to recanonize Boba as... or Jango as a Mandalorian.
Right,
he
right.
set out right from Mandalore plot 10 years ago when George Lucas said that he was not a Mandalorian. Dave came out and was like, yeah, but maybe he's a foundling. And he's been on record with that.
Right,
so I knew that
right.
that was coming. That was not a surprise to me. However, we do not yet have canonization of what exactly it means to be a Mandalorian in the EU, to become a Mandalorian when you are of age, you swear the Rezul Nare. We see that in Mando with him talking about swearing the creed. I assume that is basically the recanonization of the Rezul Nare. However, we don't yet have it confirmed that that's not just something related to the Children of the Watch or something like that. So the question is, Jango's a foundling. Does Boba count as a Mandalorian? And in my mind, he probably doesn't. This is a boy who, you know, he grew up with his father, who was a Mandalorian, but not at all with his people. We don't have any canonization or recanonization of the idea that he ever swore a creed. And ultimately, what I think that people are often misinterpret about the scene with Bo and Boba is that she's not reacting to Boba Fett. She's reacting to a clone. She does not recognize his armor. She does not recognize him as somebody who is important to this story. She just recognizes him as a bounty hunter. And then it's when she and Casca hear his voice, that's when things change. And that's right. where she goes, I've heard your voice 1,000 times before. And so I think that that's an important part of this story, because it's not the same argument. This isn't foundling. This isn't the idea of Mandalorians and foundlings. This is the idea of whether the clones who were created from a Mandalorian count as Mandalorians. Personally, right. I don't really think that they can, unless they have met those requirements of being a Mandalorian. Maybe some of them did. Maybe some of them you know, eventually did take interest in their Mandalorian heritage. But what I think is coming is stuff in Bad Batch. I really think that we're going to be seeing Bo and Imperial Mandalore in Bad Batch. And I think that that's where we're going to get the story behind I've heard your voice 1,000 times before. And it's the fact that after helping them in the Siege of Mandalore, they turn on her.
Right.
And they basically facilitate Palpatine coming in. Now, what I think is interesting is that if Bo recognizes that Jango was a Mandalorian, that hurts even more, because she recognizes that the clones do have a Mandalorian connection, and that's going to twist the knife even deeper.
Yeah. The other question I'm sitting here thinking of, as you said that, is are we caring more about something than Boba does? You know, does is this something that Boba really cares about? To me, I don't think so.
It doesn't seem like it.
Right.
Yeah, he never introduces himself as a Mandalorian. In the tragedy, to Bo, he says, I didn't claim to be a Mandalorian.
Right,
mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And even then, you mentioned the tragedy. You know, he just says he doesn't, when Din asks him if he's a rebel, he doesn't say anything. The only thing he says is, I'm just, you know, simple man way through the galaxy. That's all he claims to be, you know?
Yep.
Arca, what do you think about all that?
Yeah, I found it interesting that he just didn't seem to care. I mean, we saw from the very end of the episode, it's like he very clearly doesn't care because he's gone off to do his own thing. But I do think it brings up a really interesting point about the Mandalorians as a whole, because I feel like this whole season has kind of emphasized this idea that there are a lot of differences amongst the Mandalorians. Like, we've seen like different factions, different traditions, and there doesn't seem to be this unifying thing that says, okay, this is what a Mandalorian is. We've got these people that don't take off their helmets, and apparently they're a cult, and then you've got, you know, Bo-Katan, and then you have Jango, and it's just like, what is the thing that actually ties these people together? And I kind of want season three maybe to focus on figuring out what that is, because we've gotten a lot of exploration of what divides them, but now I think the question that has to be answered is what is going to bring them together.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, really good point.
The joke that I made was the idea that after all this, you know, what unites all of them, and you know, in general, there's this idea that they are fighters, Mandalorians, and violence and war. And then I just want Bo to be like, well, let me talk about my sister, the pacifist. I think that that's gonna, if Din ever finds out about Satine and the new Mandalorians, that's going to throw him for a loop that he hasn't even experienced yet.
Very, very possible. Yeah. Let's move away from Mandalorians just a little bit here. We'll get back to some Mandalorian stuff soon, but there was also a lot of Jedi action, you know, and starting with the episode called The Jedi, we kind of caught up with what Ahsoka's been up to lately, what she's currently doing. She's looking for Thrawn. And, my question here is actually kind of not what was in the show, but really taking Dave Filoni's comments after that show into consideration, where, you know, he kind of threw up into the air where this all fits in with the timeline. We know the epilogue of Rebels kind of shows Ahsoka, you know, and Sabine still looking for Thrawn. He's saying that maybe that might have happened, you know, after what we see here. You know, she's looking for Thrawn, and then she goes back to Lothal. What do you guys think? Where do you think that maybe he's kind of hinting at something here? Do you think that that's just kind of, you know, Dave playing around with timelines, kind of Dave being Dave type thing? Or how do you think that all fits in here?
Personally, I'm not averse to it happening after, or kind of, I'm not averse to the idea that Ezra has not been found yet. I know that a lot of people, it just kind of shocked them. And it was kind of like, I think that they wanted to believe that he's been found. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I'm really not sure yet. To me, honestly, when I first heard it, it sounded more like they had been found, and then for whatever reason, now Thrawn disappeared, and they're looking for Thrawn.
Okay.
And then I realized that in the aftermath, I realized that other people weren't hearing that. They were just hearing this idea of the Rebels storyline has not been finished yet. We really just don't know. I think that... at the time that Dave made those comments, I assume that he already knew, but at the same time, I don't think that the Ahsoka series had been written yet. That's something that he's actively working on now. And so I think that he could have simply been keeping his options open instead of taking a stance on anything.
Yeah, I, good point. I think
that's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah, that, mm-hmm. that makes a lot of sense. And yeah, I guess the way I reacted to it the first time I saw it was, okay, Ahsoka's looking for Thrawn because Thrawn and Ezra are in the same place, maybe still, you know, because they both kind of went vanished together. You know, and I saw it as more of a continuation of Rebels and everything. But yeah, it makes sense that Dave is keeping his options open with what he wants to do. So could go either way, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with all that.
Cool. And then, you know, more Jedi, even though Disney Gallery kind of glossed over Luke Skywalker in their second season recap, we're not going to do that. How's that settled for you guys? After if we've had a few weeks to digest this, still kind of riding that high, still kind of surprised as it settled in a little bit more?
Arika.
yeah, I'm the big Luke fan. I've rewatched that sequence several times since it first aired, and it still like gets me teary-eyed every time. They just did such a great job with the build-up to it and just the way that it was executed. You know, I kind of expected to just sort of get used to it after a while, but it's like even just hearing the soundtrack at that point, it's just
yeah.
They just did an amazing job with it. And yeah, and I'm impressed that they actually decided to go there. Because I think a lot of people had theorized that, oh, maybe it might be Luke, but I don't think anybody really expected them to actually take the risk and say, hey, it actually is going to be Luke Skywalker. And then
yeah.
That's what it was.
Yeah, I could fit into that camp. I you know, seeing those series, I was like, okay, yeah, maybe that might be cool. There's no way they'll do that, you know? But I was shocked, and like, I was so shocked that I've talked about this on the show before, but, and you talked about the buildup. The buildup was perfect. Because as you're going along, you're just getting these little clues here and there, and it's like, and I'm sitting here thinking, like, I know who they want me to think that is, but is that really, you know, is that really him? And it turns out it really is him. And it was built up like that, I don't think happens quite often, but it was perfectly done.
Yeah, I wasn't as surprised. At the risk of minimizing it, you know, what was in my mind as I was watching that, knowing that it was the finale, thinking of the comments that John and Dave have made before about how they're telling two stories. They're telling stories for the casual audience who don't know all of the extra stuff, but they're also telling stories for the diehard fans. What really was going through my mind, you know, as I'm, who is it? Is that, you know, there were really only several possibilities that people were theorizing. That was Ezra, mm-hmm. Cal Kestis, mm-hmm. There were a couple other people that I was really hoping could be, but ultimately there's only one person that everyone's going to recognize the significance of, and that's Luke Skywalker.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. especially for that ending, you know, especially that Grogu goes off with them. It had to be somebody that was immediately recognizable and that people, that you didn't have to spend any time justifying. And that's exactly what they were able to do with bringing Luke back.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely had those names in my mind, like Ezra and Cal Kestis, or Adam was saying maybe it's just some Jedi we haven't met yet. But always in the back of my mind was Luke, of course. And I, you know, I didn't think they'd do it. I was so glad they did though, because it makes perfect sense with the storyline, with the timeline, with Luke training, you know, a new generation of Jedi, and it just all fit really well, and ended up just being an amazing moment. You know, that I the only one minor gripe I had, you know, is just the look of his face and everything, and hopefully they can get that better if they they include him in it in the future. So
I thought that was so funny. I'll admit I actually really liked it. I maybe it's because I'm just not as massive of a Luke fan that I haven't mm-hmm. spent all of the time looking at, you know, so closely at his face, but I think that the technology is improving so immensely. It has improved since Rogue One so incredibly. And But I will admit, the funniest thing about it was that I spent the first 30 seconds going, is that Sebastian Stan?
I actually, same thing. I actually thought it was him.
It's so close, and it's so strange. And I'm very glad that they went with Mark Hamill. Mark is so excited. You can tell.
Yeah,
for sure.
And so I'm grateful that they were able to give him that. I do hope that if he comes back, I think that, you know, just go with Sebastian. I think that people would be happy if it's not CGI. I don't think that you could do CGI for much more than a short scene.
Mm-hmm. But,
The fact that there was such confusion in my mind about it just tells me it would work.
I don't think they could do a Tarkin level thing with Luke, you know, where Tarkin was a pretty major part of Rogue One. That would be, I think that'd be a little difficult with Luke, you know, doing that whole thing with him. I think we're really getting into like, where do we go from here territory, you know, now that we're talking about events at the end of season two. So, we know we have a little bit of a wait for season three, but where do we think this is going to go? We talked about Thrawn before. Is Thrawn someone that appears in this show? Is that something that's maybe reserved just for Ahsoka, the Ahsoka show? Book of Boba Fett, we talked a little bit about what combines these characters. Does Boba Fett come back for any particular reason, you know, to retake Mandalore, for example, something like that? Or is he kind of basically effectively separated from these shows? You know, what do we think about this type of stuff?
Well, I think they've made it pretty obvious that they're kind of following kind of an MCU type formula, sort of building up all of these separate stories, and then it's all going to come together at some point. And I know I've seen, you know, a lot of people saying that Thrawn is going to be like the Thanos of this story, and that everything is eventually going to center around him. So I'm not sure when we're actually going to see him. Like, I feel like they might hype him up a little bit more before they actually show him on screen. But I don't know. My theory about all these different shows coming out that are in this era is that eventually, you know, he's going to present himself as the big threat. And then everybody in each one of these shows, they're all going to have to come together at some point to basically stop him from trying to take over the galaxy, essentially. So
I can see that. Definitely
I love that, you know. At first I thought Thrawn would be exclusive to the Ahsoka storyline in that series, but the more I think about it, the more I think it would make sense that he's kind of the Thanos of this Filoniverse that we got. So I love that idea. I'd love for him to be that main villain.
Yeah, I definitely don't think that we'll be seeing Thrawn in Mando anytime soon. That didn't surprise me at all when Ahsoka was announced. I thought the fact that Din isn't even present when Ahsoka mentions Thrawn in that episode. So it definitely felt very contained. I think that season three, I'm actually kind of, I'm kind of patting myself on the back. When the Razor Crest was destroyed, I posed the question of where are we going from here? Because the story cannot continue the way that it has for the last two seasons. And I said, is Din going to get a new ship? And then when people were theorizing that, you know, Boba might die and he might get Slave One, I was like, okay, I could definitely see that. But my initial idea was, I think that this is the end. This is something's going to happen that's going to switch the story. And I theorized that Bo would be, you know, I said that Din's clan would be growing. And basically that the thing that I theorized was most probable was that he would be joining Bo-Katan and her storyline to get the throne back. That's what I think that the majority of season three will be. Ahsoka will have her storyline with Thrawn, hopefully Ezra, and then that's going to kind of catapult us into Favroniverse in a huge way.
Pedro
Pascal talked a little bit and seems like he has kind of confirmed that there will be some sort of time jump in season three, which I was kind of half expecting anyway. You know, we talked a little bit just now about, you know, Luke being in this for any extended period of time. Do we think that's kind of how we get past that? You know, that there's a little bit of a time jump. Luke and Grogu have kind of trained off screen and, you know, because I mean, I would expect Grogu and Din to kind of reunite at some point, right?
Mm-hmm. I assume so. I can't imagine they would take away their moneymaker.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
There is a huge percentage of especially middle-aged women who don't care a jot about Star Wars.
Yeah. But they want Mandalorian, what? Where's the baby at?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I have to believe that they'll be back together. But what's funny is that while I agree with that, I feel like Bo-Katan's story demands that it pick up right from the get-go. If you put too much space in between that story, it's like, well, will they have already figured out what to do with the Darksaber? that can't really just wait.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there's definitely some struggle there that you put that off too long, you would expect that to be resolved somehow, you know? Right.
I would expect, if it was just that story, I would be theorizing that we would pick up right on the ship.
Immediately.
Mm-hmm. Because they have to get off that ship. And right now there's a really big conflict between them. Mm-hmm. What do? They put down the Darksaber and like, okay, let's all get in the ship and go home.
They just don't talk to each other on the ride home.
Yeah. It's a very awkward silence the whole way home. Yeah,
yeah. I could see Bo being like, I gave you one order. I told you he was mine.
Oh, that, yeah. That would be an awkward ride home the whole way.
Where are they going?
Yeah, right. Because they don't really have anywhere else to go at this point. You know, they don't have Mandalore. Yeah. Do we have any other thoughts or theories about where we're heading from here in season 3? Anything else we expect to see? I know that retaking Mandalore storyline is probably way high up there. But anything else we're expecting, hoping for?
I want to know what happened to the armorer and, you know, the Mandalorians from Nevarro. We don't really have an answer to that yet, but I'm assuming that at least she's going to show up in season 3 somehow.
Yeah, because she didn't show up at all in season 2. I would assume she's still alive. You know, it's one of those things that you don't see a body, you know, don't have a body. They're not dead. So, I mean, last we saw, she was very much alive. So I would expect that, you know, she didn't die off screen or something silly like that. So
I'm curious to know what Boba's place is going to be in this. You know, we see him now on Tatooine, right. And mm-hmm. he's kind of setting himself up as what, like a crime lord? I don't know. I'm not exactly sure what he's planning
that
to
way,
do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, you know, hopefully some kind of a more benevolent leader than the Hutts ever were. But I'm not really sure what I think his place is going to be in this greater storyline.
Right.
I haven't seen any implications that they're looking to explore the EU idea that he ever becomes the Mandalore,
which right now.
I think that a lot of people still are kind of like, well, you know, it's going to be Bo-Katan versus Boba Fett. And I'm like, I don't know if I've seen any implication that they're looking to go that way. They certainly could, but it seems like he's got a storyline on Tatooine. I'm just wondering if that will be a pretty cohesive story and that's where we'll end it, or if he will eventually come back to this main Mandalorian group.
Yeah, it's a great question because I kind of got the impression that he's off on his own. He feels comfortable with what he did in that whole scenario, and then he's done. But then we start talking about this whole MCU style, everyone comes back and reunites to do this. I don't know what Boba's place is in that. I don't know how I feel there, you know. I don't know if he's just off on his own now or if he does come back for some reason.
It'll also be interesting to see what we get in Bad Batch because Fennec has been confirmed to be that. Yeah. So I think that will give us more texture to what we're going to be expecting for Book of Boba Fett. Her story might end up being just as important going forward into this new Favroniverse as his does.
Mm.
Yeah. Go ahead, Arca.
Sorry. You know, what I found interesting about the Boba Fett series is, I'm wondering, since this is apparently seems to be dealing with kind of like the criminal underworld? Like, are we going to see more with smugglers? Because I know that people have been talking about, like, oh, are they going for some kind of new version of the Thrawn trilogy here? And there was a pretty significant storyline with the smugglers in in that series. So I'm wondering if that's going to be, you know, this their, you know, Dave's version of that, and that's how it's going to tie into everything.
I've seen those theories, and I'm if that's what they're doing, I am 1,000% on board with that.
Yeah, I mean, for me, coming out of this season, I felt like some things for now were going to be contained. Like, I felt like the Book of Boba Fett would just be centered around Boba Fett and his storyline. Mandalorian season three would focus on Mandalore and the throne of Mandalore and Bo-Katan and Mando and everything. And then, you know, Ahsoka for now being contained within that Thrawn story. But then later on, it kind of expands and, you know, we see them coming together down the road. So that's kind of where I'm at with it. And to be a little bold with this, I know it doesn't make sense as far as like money making and merchandise and all that, but I would love to not see Grogu until like the end of season three, so that you really feel that absence that Mando is experiencing and feeling as well, just so the impact of that is there. So I would be okay with that personally. I don't know if they'll do that, but you know, those are just kind of my thoughts on what's coming down.
You are a bold one.
I am.
I'll echo that though. That's kind of what I think has to happen. Otherwise, it's one of those things where if you kill a character off and then immediately resurrect them, then the death doesn't really feel like it means anything.
Right, right.
And I think that in this case, leave Grogu with Luke for a season. Let Din deal with the fact that he came to love this little green gremlin son of his, and then let him deal with not having him around, and then eventually bring them back together. I think that you're right. A good place to do it would be at the end of season three, so that we aren't totally absent of his presence throughout the entire season, but it actually gives some weight to them being reunited.
The other thing, back to Pedro's comments, is I don't think he actually said like when there would be a time jump, you know. So if there is a time jump, and it, you know, it doesn't have to happen in episode one, you know, we could deal with that type of stuff, and then, you know, we have that time jump maybe at the end of this, towards the end of the season, maybe last episode, and then, you know, then we move into where season four heads, you know. All right, any closing thoughts on Mando season two and heading into season three?
It'll be an exciting ride.
It will.
Yes, indeed.
Yep.
Well, Jess and Arika, we want to thank you very much for joining us again, and we hope you had a good time. We hope to see you back on the show. Why don't you let everyone know where they can find you and everything you're up to?
You can find our podcast, Stories by Darksaber Light. We're on all of your different podcasting sites. We've been taking a bit of a hiatus after Mando season two is done, but we should be starting up again very soon. I know that the first week of February, there's a Star Wars podcasting day, which has been started with by the podcasting community. And so you can expect us back for that. And I'm sure that we'll be it'll be interesting to see what we're coming up with. It'll be interesting for me to figure out what we're coming up with now that this podcast kind of started as a way to first interact with Mando, and now we're in the midst of creating a calendar going forward for the other things that we want to explore. So you can find us on Twitter at DarksaberLight, and other than that, you can find Arika on Instagram. Arika, want to give your handle for that?
Yeah, it's at alias Arika Jade. It's mostly just really stupid memes, but if that's your thing, so.
That is my thing.
That is your presence. So, other than that, yeah, feel free to let us know what you'd like to see on the podcast as well. We're always open to ideas and guests and all kinds of things like that.
Awesome. Well, thank you again for joining us. We had a great time. Your perspectives are spot on, and we loved every, you know, gave me new things to think about, and I'm excited for season three all over again. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
I'm just glad you're here. At the end.
Thank you again for tuning in. Thank you to Jess and Arcajade. We had a wonderful time talking to them. Make sure that you're listening to their podcast. Follow them on Twitter and Instagram and everywhere else, because they have a wonderful podcast over there at Dark Saber Light, and they break down stuff in ways that I don't think about, which is perfect for me. It gives me brand new perspectives on everything about Mandalorian lore and Jedi lore and everything. So it's absolutely worth the listen. Make sure you check them out. Subscribe to our show on your favorite podcast app if you haven't already. Remember that we are continuing our rewatches in Discord, except we have shifted over now to WandaVision. This past Wednesday, we watched episodes 1 and 2. This past Thursday, we watched episodes 1 and 2. And then this coming week, we'll watch episode 3. So make sure that you're in the Discord for that as well. Check out our website, FromACertainPointOfView.com, where you'll find all kinds of blog articles. You can send us questions, show topics. Kyle Scully has continued his series, his Positive Force series, so make sure you check those out. Those are wonderful articles on our website. Our socials are Instagram at CertainPOVPod. Twitter is also at CertainPOVPod. The Facebook page is From a Certain Point of View. Our Discord server links are in the show notes and on the website. Our email address is CertainPOVPod@gmail.com. And we are hosted by Anchor.fm, where you can send us a 60-second voicemail. If you have any thoughts on where Season 3 of Mandalorian might head, make sure you send those in. We'd love to play those on the show. Check out Red5Network.com for all the other shows on the Red 5 Network. There's so many wonderful different shows we talked about. Force of Light Entertainment doing their Lord of the Rings first time watch through. We talked about that in the open. Check them out. Continue watching with them. And then, you know, just check out all the other shows as well, because there's so many great, great shows on the Red 5 Network. You can find me on the internet. Best place is Twitter and Instagram. Both of those are TheGauze85. And Josh, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at JediJarJar1722. And don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel. This week we'll be dropping the video segment of our talk with Darksaber Light. So be looking for that. And thank you so much for joining us, whether you were watching us on YouTube, listening later, whatever. We really appreciate your support, and we couldn't do it without you. So just remember that everything we said today was true.
From a certain point of view.